Hello, listeners. Hello, Ree. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Webster. Welcome, everybody, to our yet another podcast. What number are we on now?
Oh, it's about 20, I think.
20.
If I was them, I'd be getting bored.
Yeah, I can't believe you. People are still coming back to listen to this garbage that we natter about.
Maybe they're not. Maybe we're just talking and sending it out to cyberspace and they're just listening to the useful stuff. And this stuff's gone.
Yeah, but it makes me feel important and, you know, that's enough.
Great, good. Let's keep doing it then. Today, we're going to talk about the
ear.
The embryology of the ear.
The ear. Good. Everything. Everybody, you're using your ears now. We're going to be talking about how they developed.
So or in South Wales, the ear.
The ear. From year to year. Yeah.
How are your baby's ears?
My baby's ears, I think, are coming along quite nicely. What am I? 18 weeks now, just over. So, somebody told me that it can hear stuff already. I don't know.
Getting
if that's
on for halfway there then.
Yep. I've got, well, it's all a bit out of sync really, but I've got my 20-week scan in about a week and I'll only be just over 19 then, but that's all right, I think.
So
that'd be quite nice.
So it can hear, can it? He, she?
I think so. I don't know if they're absolutely perfectly formed or in the right place yet, but it's definitely getting along that way. All the inner ear, middle ear, all that sort of stuff should be in place.
Rob hasn't started playing bark to your belly then.
No, Robin does keep talking to it, but it's normally to say things about how stupid I've been or something. So I'm not sure.
That's not very positive, is it?
No, I know. I'm not sure that's the best start. Your silly mother, do you know what she did today? But no, it's really good. Actually, we've just had a bit of news. Another one of our friends has had a baby. And it was a boy, and it was an 11-pounder, wasn't it?
It wasn't a boy, it was a bowling ball.
Poor little thing. The mother, I mean. She's really not that big, so we don't know any details, but congratulations to us.
Everybody's pregnant at the moment.
Apart from you, or are you?
No, I've had enough.
Have you been what?
I'm training for an Ironman, I can't have any more babies.
Or can you?
No. Well, mind you, I'm not doing any bike training yet. The Ironman's a few years off, actually. Yeah, when the bike training kicks off, then I definitely won't be having any babies.
No chance. Fair enough. No, it's been really good, and we've listened to the baby's heartbeat a few times, and yeah, all that kind of stuff. So it's all very exciting.
Good. Yeah, you sound excited.
Yeah. Well, I've stopped feeling sick, so I can feel a little bit better now. And
good.
You know, I went in for a swim and all those sorts of things that I used to do that I haven't done for a long time, so it's been nice.
Have you started looking at baby stuff yet and buying baby stuff?
No.
My Plenty sister of had time a baby for that.
Shower. Yeah, my sister had a baby shower and she got loads of stuff, so I'm just hoping that'll come my way afterwards.
Well, that's a good idea. Have a party, get stuff.
Yeah.
I like that idea. My garage is full of stuff if you need any.
Oh, what? Thanks. Is it baby stuff or is it just old bits of bike?
Well, both. Come and have a rummage. There's all sorts of baby stuff in there.
Brilliant.
Anyway, come on then. Right. Let's talk about the ear. So,
let's get back on track.
In the adult ear, I know that you've got the inner ear, the middle ear, and the outer ears. The outer ear is the bit you can see. It's all the flappy, rubbery, sorry, elastic, fibrocartilaginous bits of the ear. And then
they call it the
tube.
Pinna or the auricle.
Oh, okay. There's a tube then that runs to the eardrum, so that's all the outer ear. Then inside the eardrum, you've got the middle ear, haven't you, with the ossicles, the bones there, transmitting forces across to the oval window, a little membrane. Then the other side of that membrane then is the inner ear, which is inside the bone. And you've got the cochlea and the what's it, the
labyrinth.
Semicircular canals, yeah. So the cochlea
that's
does
beautiful.
The... Yeah, so cochlea does the sound, semicircular canals, it is involved in balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on then. So let's do that inner ear, then middle ear, then outer ear. What can you tell me about the development of the inner ear?
Okay. The inner ear. The inner ear is like kind of like the business end. That's how I think about it. And it actually develops from ectoderm, so from surface ectoderm. If you remember back to the eye podcast that we did, the last podcast, we had the lens, part of the eye, was developing from the surface ectoderm, and that part was the lens, and it actually sort of had a placode thickening of the ectoderm that invaginated, and that was at the level in the eye, that was at the level of the forebrain. In the ear, almost exactly the same thing happens, but it's at the level of the hindbrain. Okay, so it's
right.
Sort of low down in the neck of the embryo, if you like.
So it's ectoderm.
But it's still ectoderm. Okay,
okay, so in the eye, so, we had the so the back part of the eye forms from the central nervous system. That doesn't happen.
The
in
neuroectoderm,
the ear,
does it? Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But in the you've got that same bit, the same idea that there's ectoderm on the surface, which invaginates in and then bleds off from the surface and becomes an ovoid shaped vesicle.
That's
underneath
exactly
the
what
surface
I mean.
Of the embryo. Right, okay.
So the terminology that we're looking at is the area of the thickening ectoderm is called the otic placode.
Right.
Okay, otic placode. And then as that invaginates, it becomes and blebs off inside the embryo, we get the otic vesicle. Sometimes it's called the otocyst or otocyst.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So all those sorts of terms you might come across when you're reading up in your textbooks later. And basically, it's this otic vesicle that is going to develop into all aspects of the inner ear. Okay, so how it does it is it actually divides into a ventral part and a dorsal part.
Okay.
Keeping it simple, the ventral part ends up being the cochlea and the saccule, and the dorsal part ends up becoming the utricle, the semicircular canals, and the endolymphatic duct.
Okay. So it splits.
I don't really.
Then we get those two major parts and some of the other parts of the adult ear.
Okay. So in a little bit more detail, we've got sort of certain events along the way. So at about 7 weeks, the semicircular canals that are developing can be recognised by, you know, various methods. And the cochlea, if you can see an image or something, I think we're going to have one up, aren't we? The cochlea is this spiral structure, okay? So, and it starts off as a kind of duct with one turn, but then by about 11 weeks or so, it actually has the full 2.5 turns of this spiral cochlea that we have in mammals.
Okay, so it's a little sticking outy bit, and it gets longer and coils itself up then to form that cochlea that we recognise.
Yeah, it's basically developing. Yeah.
Kind of a coiled shell type thing inside the bone.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of difference in when people say it happens. Some say it's, you know, fully turned by 8 weeks. Some say 11. So, it's with embryology, you know, things aren't always absolutely exact. But it all
biology.
Happens. Yeah, it all happens very quickly and really within the first couple of months. So, yeah, so that's that part. One thing that we should also mention with the inner ear, staying with the fact that it's this functional part, and we've got the cochlea, which is going to be to do with the hearing, the sound part of everything. There's actually, it's called an organ, okay? So this is where the sensory cells have come from, and this is where the sensory cells take the sound and relay it back through the vestibular cochlear nerve or cranial nerve 8 back to the brain, okay? So this is called the organ of Corti. And do you know what? I don't know who Corti was.
No, I don't know. Have a look on whonamedit.com.
Yeah. but the organ of Corti is essentially a membrane, and this membrane is within the cochlea, and it's called the tectorial membrane, and it's the membrane, and it's the sensory hair cells within the cochlea, okay? And
So those sensory hair cells, then, are formed from the ectoderm, so they're epithelial hair cells, then, pretty much.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all that, and then, I mean, it is quite a complex structure, and when you see it, it's really quite a beautiful structure as well. It's impressive.
Yeah, the parts of the inner ear are superb. They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
They're difficult to dig out of the bone, mind.
Yeah. So you know, that's sort of how a little bit about how the cochlea forms. Remember, that was part of the ventral otic vesicle. The dorsal part, we get the semicircular canals. Now, the formation of those is a bit interesting and quite hard to describe, actually. So I'll give it a go, but I have got an image that hopefully will help with any explanations. But basically, the semicircular canals start out as kind of flattened pockets. It's kind of like coming off the utricle. They're kind of this flattened disc shape, if you like. They come off, and then the membrane come together, okay, but they leave around the outer edge, they don't come together, so they leave these kind of hollow areas along the outer bit, but the middle bits come together, okay?
So there are kind of three flat spaces.
Yeah.
And then the bit closer gets flattened, and the bit further away remains open. So you get a tube at the end and a tube all the way around the edge.
Yeah, so you get this. That's exactly right. And then when the membranes come together, they end up disintegrating. So they end up with just the tube around the end, which are the canals.
Right. And again, those have got hair cells in them, haven't they?
They have. They have. And an important part of these, the anatomical structure of these, is where they actually enter the utricle. There's a little, at one end, there's a dilation in each canal.
Yeah.
And it's called the ampulla. And within that, there are these sensory cells, and they're the ones that are going to record any changes in balance or equilibrium.
Swinging your head around and sitting on a chair and spinning around, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and basically, these cells. Yeah, we've all played those games. Normally on the beach at, what is it, Beach Olympics or something. But it's the endolymph. There's the inner ear is filled with this fluid, and that's what happens when you move your ear. These cells record changes in that fluid moving, and then relay it back.
Yeah.
Via
yeah.
the I think it's a vestibular part of the
neural nerve. Yeah. Very neat.
Very cool, actually. Okay.
Well, okay. So that's the inner ear. What about the middle ear then?
Okay, the middle ear. If you remember, we talked about we mentioned the ossicles, and the ossicles are bones that you all have heard of. Before I talk about all of those,
smallest bones in the human body.
Oh, little ones, little bones.
Teeny bones.
Put that to one side for a minute. I want to talk about the space that these bones are in, okay? Because they're in a chamber. And if you can remember back to the pharyngeal arches podcast that we did.
Yeah.
We talked about... we talked about not only the pharyngeal arches, but we also talked about pharyngeal pouches. Now, pharyngeal pouches are on the inside of the embryo, okay? So they're on the inner part. So they're going to be... endoderm lined pouches.
Okay, so you've got the pouches on the inside, then you've got the arch, then you've got the cleft on the outside.
Yes.
Pharyngeal cleft.
You
okay.
Listen to that podcast. Yeah. So I just want to talk about the first pharyngeal pouch, okay? Because that is the endoderm lining that forms the tubotympanic recess. We did talk about it in the podcast, okay? So the tubotympanic recess, really, clues in the name, tympanic, that's going to end up being the tympanic cavity. Okay, and so that envelops these ossicles as they're developing. Okay?
Cool. So that's how you
endoderm
get the space.
Lining. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. So now we can talk about the ossicles that actually develop. And pharyngeal arch 1 and 2 are really important.
So we've got the malleus, the incus, and the stapes.
They're the ossicles, yes.
And these bones are all articulating with each other. To transmit vibration from the eardrum to the oval window. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like
nice
that.
One. Yeah, roughly.
All right.
Yeah,
so both pharyngeal arches 1 and 2 are involved here. So how is that then?
Well, okay. So the first pharyngeal arch creates something that we call Meckel's cartilage. And this is like a band, and it's going to develop into different types of cartilage or bone. But for us, specifically in the ear... it forms the malleus, or the head of the malleus. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It also forms a little part of the incus, which is the body of the incus and the short process. So have a look at the anatomy of the bones, and you'll see the different parts of them.
I'll try and take some photos of our models and stick them up in this podcast.
Brilliant, brilliant.
And maybe even label them if I'm kind.
Steady on. Don't make it too easy. But it's just important to remember that different parts of bone are developing from different embryological origins, okay? So the first pharyngeal arch makes part of the malleus and part of the incus. The second pharyngeal arch, okay, through a transitional stage called Reichart's cartilage, a bit like Meckel's cartilage, but in the second pharyngeal arch, that makes the handle of the malleus, the long process of the incus, and all of the stapes.
Okay. The first arch makes most of the malleus and the incus. Mm-hmm. The second arch makes the stapes.
Most of the stapes.
Little bits of the other ones.
Yeah, that's essentially it. And the two transitional cartilages that we talked about, Meckel's and Reichart's, they are exactly that. They're just transitional stages.
Sure. Each pharyngearch has got a bit of cartilage in it, isn't it, which forms the bony bits or cartilaginous bits that are going to form from that arch.
Yeah.
All right. So in the middle ear, these ossicles, I know they're attached to a couple of muscles, aren't they? Stapes is attached to stapedius.
Losing the name. I love it.
Yeah, that's why I remember that one. What's the other one? Is the malleus is attached to a muscle that extends down the eustachian or the auditory tubes, isn't it?
What's that muscle? That one's called the tensor tympani.
Tensor tympani, that's the one. Tensor tympani attaches to the malleus, stapedius attaches to the stapes. Right, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, and that helps to sort of just control a little bit of the effect that the tympanic membrane, when it vibrates, you know, and it comes through it.
Bit of control, bit of dampening, like a suspension spring. Okay.
Exactly. And what's interesting about these two muscles?
Oh, go on.
Go on.
Carry on.
Is that one's developed from the first pharyngeal arch and the other is developed from the second pharyngeal arch. Which is which?
Stapes, malleus, incus and stapes. So stapes is the second arch bone. So stapedius being attached to stapes must also be made from the second arch. So it must be innervated by the facial nerve then.
Absolutely correct.
Aha. So tensor tympani then, attached to the malleus, must be innervated by the nerve of the first arch, which is the trigeminal nerve.
Trigeminal. Brilliant. Exactly. Julio. It makes so much sense when you realise the origin of these things. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, of course, actually, when you look at the facial nerve and you know it goes near the ear because the facial nerve comes out through the stylomastoid foramen behind the styloid process, which is right by the ear if you look at a skull. And, of course, the chorda tympani nerve carrying parasympathetic fibres down into the front of the face, that's passing right through this area, isn't it? So facial nerve, second arch, stapedius, and all those other jobbies as well.
I know. It's like magic how it all comes together.
You link these things together, it starts to make sense. It's messy, but it makes sense. There might not be a why, but there is an is. Okay, so that's inner ear and middle ear done. What about the outer ear, that lumpy bit and the tube? Oh, and also, I guess, the eardrum as well. What about the eardrum? How does that form?
Ah, glad you asked. The eardrum is classified as part of the outer ear. Or external ear, if you like. And what's really interesting about this is that it contains all three embryological tissue origins. If what I
so
mean,
all
is,
three germ layers: ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm.
That's what I was looking for. Germ layers. Thank you. Yeah. So it's got, because the tympanic cavity is lined with endoderm. Okay. So it's got that endoderm lining on one side. Then it's got a mesoderm sort of layer in between, and then it's got this ectoderm that's developed from the external auditory meatus and through the tube down. So it's like a sandwich.
Nice. I think it's the ectoderm. Is the ectoderm layer starts out quite thick, I think, and it gets thinner.
Nah.
I think. And if that doesn't occur, then you can. Well, it causes congenital deafness if that actual thinning doesn't occur. So you have a thick eardrum. Of course, if any of the other structures we've talked about so far don't form, like the ossicles or the eardrum or the cochlea, if they don't form properly, then you'll also get congenital deafness. And I think you said this all occurs around week 7, week 8. So if
really early, yeah.
Yeah, so if the embryo is subjected to teratogens around that period, then the development of the ear is at risk, and hence congenital deafness. Okay.
Good point.
So that's the eardrum then.
Yeah.
What about
it's simple, but it's just a nice example of using all three germ layers in one structure.
Yeah, it links into now, clefts and pouches and stuff. Anyway, by the by, what about the bit that me granddad could waggle?
I can wiggle my ears, can you?
No.
Seriously?
What muscles do you use to wiggle your ears?
Oh. Probably
temporalis. I've no idea. I've absolutely no idea.
What does it look like?
Yeah, temporalis. Looks like you're wiggling.
It's not
your
really
forehead.
Wiggling your ears. Wiggling your head.
Yeah. It's like you're wiggling your forehead, and your ears are attached to that.
Yeah. My grandpa taught me. Right.
I'm sure my granddad did it differently to that, but I don't remember how. That was a long time ago.
Well, I'm sure he did.
Do you reckon there's a grandpa club of ear wiggling? And they all share the skill.
It's possible.
Or is it just the
I'm
granddads have
ear-wiggling
bigger
and
ears so it gets easier?
lengthening lobes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the outer, the external ear that we'll talk about now. Okay,
yep.
It can be called the pinna. Pinna or pina, I don't know how you want to announce it.
Pinna.
I like pinna myself.
Double N, isn't it? P-I-N-N-A. Pinna.
Oracle. Is that named after somebody?
Oracle?
No, pinna.
I don't know. Oracle's just a shape thing, isn't it? Pinna, I don't think
yeah.
so. I don't know.
Okay. So anyway,
this is something else to look up after the podcast.
Yeah. The essence of this is that it develops from 6 hillocks that develop on the first and second pharyngeal arches. Okay, so we're
so
back
little
to
lumps then,
arches.
little tiny lumpy hills. Hillocks.
Hillocks.
Right.
Yeah. They're actually called the hillocks of His.
Uh-huh.
And you can start to see them as early as week 5, which is quite impressive.
Uh-huh.
Cut a long story short, and there is a little bit of variation on this, okay? It's one of those classic areas that some say all this develops from the first and then this develops from the second pharyngeal arch, but there is a bit of difference. But what is right, what is, you know, not debatable, really, is that the hillocks 1, 2, and 3 develop from the first pharyngeal arch.
Okay.
And then hillocks 4, 5, and 6 develop from the second.
Okay.
Happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then what do those hillocks become?
Okay. So the first three, they essentially become the tragus. And get a bit picture of an ear when you're looking at this. Or
which
when
bit's
you're
the tragus?
Okay. It's the bit around the back. It's on a
tragus
diagram.
Is that little lumpy bit anterior to the hole, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Oh, am I thinking of the helix?
The helix is the curly bit, hence helix.
Yeah.
Curling around the ear.
Okay. So it's basically the tragus and the helix that develop in from that.
Right.
And then you've got the anti-helix, the anti-tragus.
The anti-tragus.
Yeah. and they all develop from the second pharyngeal arch. I have done a diagram, so hopefully that will be coming up now and I'll help explain it a little bit.
Yeah, we'll pop it up there if you want to see it. Otherwise, you can look in your favourite textbook if you want to.
Well, yeah.
But those six hillocks then.
No, I didn't say that.
Sorry? What didn't you say?
Wikipedia.
Yeah. So those six hillocks then form the external bits of the ear that we all see and recognise and wobble.
Yeah, and there was a bit of debate about where the ear lobe forms from, but it would appear that it has some input from hillock 1 and 6, as the 1999 paper says.
So I wonder what accounts for... I say Blofeld's lost earlobes. Okay, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, James Bond.
Yeah, I was going to say, explain yourself.
It wasn't Blofeld. It wasn't that Blofeld doesn't have any earlobes. Blofeld was trying to, I don't know, prove his that he was a descendant of some duchy and that family didn't have earlobes or something, so he chopped his earlobes off. As well as had some other plastic surgery.
Are you a big Bond fan?
No, I just remember that for some reason. That's my anatomy interest. The whole earlobe genetics, really? There's a family
of
some people without earlobes, and okay. I know earlobes vary.
Okay, I do find it interesting that the free hanging earlobes are the dominant genetic phenotype.
So
and then
are
the ones that are attached are recessive.
So it's much less likely to not have earlobes. See, you never go around looking at people's earlobes, do you?
Well, actually, I do.
Oh, right, okay. Normal people don't go around looking at other people's earlobes. It's like noses.
Yeah.
Nose is in the middle of your face, but you never see it until you look at it.
Yeah.
And then you can't help but see everybody's noses, and that's all you can see then.
I like noses. Mine's got a bit of a ski slope. But anyway, we're not doing those. We're doing... We haven't done smell. Are we going to do the nose?
Well, the embryology of the nose, I don't know. Maybe at a much, much later date. Unless
probably
we get lots
really
of requests specifically asking for it.
Okay, any other lobe facts? I've got one.
Go on,
okay,
then.
Your earlobes do elongate with age. Okay, so now
we're
going to be looking at old people's earlobes. Yeah, but do you know this? Men's do it faster than women's by 0.015 millimeters a year. That's in her.
That sounds like a small difference. That sounds like a small difference, but old men's ears are much bigger than old ladies' ears.
I know.
Wow.
Nice little fact there.
Thank you. Just think, if there were loads of stem cells in your ears, you could, anyway.
No, don't
get No, that's excellent. Thank you, Louis.
Well, pleasure. So basically, we've got the inner ear, which is all those things, the cochlea, the utricle, the saccule, the semicircular canal. So that's all your action centre for hearing and for balance. Then we've got the middle
sensory
ear.
Sensory bit.
Yeah, then we've got the middle ear, and that's kind of the transmission from sound through to, you know, relaying it to the brain and what have you.
So that's the ossicles.
Yeah, brilliant. And then we've got the outer ear, which includes the eardrum, and the auricle, which all develop from the hillux of His.
Sweet. Thank you.
Easy. Pleasure.
Hey, I've learned a little bit because I've not really paid much attention to the embryology of the ear before now, although the inner ear is a beautiful structure.
Yeah, I when I drew it, I sort of, you know, really appreciated it.
Cool. All right, thanks, Ree. So are we going to move on to a little bit of embryology next? On to a bit of anatomy next time.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Because although I thought there were a huge number of anatomy resources out there already, and there was no need for us to add to that, we've had quite a few requests of people liking this same format applied to anatomy. So we'll try and link it into the stuff we're teaching in the lab about now, shall we?
Okay, absolutely. More than happy to do that. And if anyone has got any special requests, you can always email me at r.s.dereed@swansea.ac.
Yeah, but how do you spell Dereed anyway?
Okay.
Not a normal name that normal people have.
D-E-W-R.
Go on, start from the beginning. I'll put a link in anyway, but go on, start from the beginning.
www.zibit.com. Okay, so r.s.dereed@swansea.ac.uk. That's if there's any requests, anything you want us to go over, okay? But other than that, we'll stick with what we got and we'll make it all apply to Swansea's curriculum.
Yeah, so we'll do some GI tract stuff.
Maybe
I don't know what we'll do. That's what we're teaching
about. That sounds fun. That sounds fun.
All right, cheers, Ree.
Thank you, Dr. Webster. Bye, everyone.
Take it easy. I'll see you soon. Bye.